One Christmas, 30 years ago, I asked my grandfather, my mum's father, to tell the story of our family, and I taped it using a cassette recorder. I was 13 years old. After dinner, the family gathered round on the veranda. My grandfather, grandma, my parents, my brother and sister, my aunt, and me. I clicked on the tape recorder, and grandfather began telling us the story of where we came from. Over the period of about 45 minutes to an hour, he told us the story of how a village in China was raided and pillaged, and a young boy taken in by bandits. The story goes on to cover the boy's escape to start a new life in Malaya, Malay witchcraft and shamanism, three sisters who married the same man, and a young girl given away to pay a debt. This is a Fusion View podcast, and my name is Yang Mei Ui. Listening to that recording now, 30 years later, I have a sense that my grandfather was very aware that he was setting down the story for posterity, for the future generations to come. He is careful and measured, and he gives details of names, places and dates. I don't know what prompted me to make that recording, other than perhaps knowing that I was going to be a writer, and having a sense that one day I would write the family saga. In the years to come, I did try and write. There are various versions, the non-fiction version, the fiction version, but somehow I just never managed to get anything finished. Who knows, I may yet still write the family story, or I may never do so. But at any rate, I'm very glad that I made this recording. It is the last and only recording that the family has of my grandfather. By September 1977, in the next year, he had died of a heart attack at Heathrow Airport. Before I play the recording, I should clarify just a couple of phrases that are in the tape. My grandfather refers to a bomo, that is a Malay witch doctor or shaman, who practices the ancient animal spiritualism which is indigenous to the Malay archipelago before Islam came to the region, when that folk tradition then went underground. You will also hear me refer to my grandfather as Gong Gong, which is the Chinese for grandpa. The sound quality isn't perfect. It was recorded using a tape machine as we all sat out on the veranda, everyone gathered round. In the background, you can hear the creaking of the cicadas in the hot tropical night and the passing traffic. And later on, about halfway through, it starts to rain and a phone rings. You can also hear some of the comments from the family gathered round, and also my aunt laughing.
Tan Sri Dr. Lim Sui An by Wu Yang Mei. In number 25 Sussanan Road, Taiping, Perak, Malaysia. On the 23rd December 1976 at 9 p.m. Can you tell me the story about your grandfather?
What I'm going to tell you about is the story of my grandfather, Lim Kui Sin, who came from China many, many years ago. There are no written records in the family, but what I'm going to tell you is what I've heard from my own father, Mr. Lim Ti Hui. Now, somewhere in the middle of the last century, the 19th century, my grandfather Lim Kui Sin was then a small boy, and all that he remembered was that he was a Hokkien care, living somewhere in the interior, in the province of Hokkien in China. At that period, he could not remember his parents or his family, because the last thing he could remember was an invasion into his village by crowds of people at night. And these people were known as the long-haired brigands, or in Chinese, Xiong Mou Cha. This probably happened during the period of the Opium War, around about 1840. at that time, these brigands had long hair, armed with knives, invaded and pillaged the village, slaughtered all the people, and as far as my grandfather remembered, he was then a small boy. After the incident, on the next day, he was picked up by the chief of these brigands, or robber chief as you might call him, who was very fierce, yet had a very soft heart and had sympathy for this small little boy crying alone in his house. So the robber chief took him under his wing and looked after him and brought it up as his own son. All that my grandfather could remember was that his original surname was He, H-double-E. But he took on the surname of Lim, L-I-M, from the robber chief who became his adoptive father. After many years of difficult life in China, when he attained his majority and became a man, conditions in China changed, and towards the latter part of the 19th century, probably around the 1860s, he came over to Malaya. Now, in those days, traveling was by junk, and it cost a lot of money to come to Malaya. And as he had no money, he came to Malaya under what was then known as indentured labor, which means that in Malaya there were people who needed labor to develop the country, to open up the jungles in Malaya, to plant spices for export to Europe. And as they required manpower, these employers of labor would pay the expenses for the prospective workers from China to come to Malaya, who would then be under a contract to work for a few years, where they would then get their release from this contract. Now, my grandfather came under this scheme and landed in Penang, and was then taken to a little town south of Penang on the mainland called Sungai Bakap, where he was put to work in a spice plantation, growing nutmeg, cinnamon, cloves, and all the spices then of economic value in this country. After a few years of working in this estate, where he was fed, clothed, and had his salary, and when his contract was matured, he became an independent man. And during that period too, Christianity had been propagated in Malaya by the British, and he became converted into the Methodist faith. From Sungai Bakap, he came over to Taiping as one of the pioneers to open up another plantation in Ayakuning, a small little village 3 miles south of Taiping. At this period, this bit of land was given to the Methodist mission to open up for purposes of agriculture and settlement. A group of Christians, including my grandfather, settled in this area. And amongst this group was a man who was the ancestor of Mr. Ang Chai Tit. In those days, the jungles were felled by hand, and the settlers had to build their own wooden huts and develop the plantation themselves. In this particular plantation where my grandfather settled, there were many wild animals, and there used to be tigers which would roam the neighborhood, and every night when the tigers came, it roared and made a lot of noise, frightening the people. And my grandfather was given a gun by the government to protect himself and his plantation. It was a long single barrel muzzle loader, which means you got to muzzle load the gun with gunpowder and shot through the muzzle to frighten away the tigers. My father remembered that my grandfather used to shoot into the air to make a big noise to drive away the tigers.
Do you know exactly where in China your grandfather lived? And
why did he?
And why he left China?
Well, my grandfather must be in his early teens, around about 10 or 12, because he remembered the name of his village, which was Hiong Chong Yen. It was in the district of Samfong, in the province of Jiangxi, the capital of which was Kian Chang Fu. There is another version about his coming to Malaysia, and I gather that after he was adopted by the robber chief, he grew up, and when he was old enough, he was made to work for the robbers and used to travel with them. He probably was not satisfied with that mode of life. He did not want to join in the raiding of other villages. So one day, it seems, he discovered his own origin, remembered of being told by people around who his parents were and how the robber chief had slaughtered his whole family, and because of the discontent and discovery of his past history, during one of the forced marches he escaped from the gang and went over difficult country until he reached a port where he planned to migrate to Malaya.
How did your grandfather come to get married?
You remember I told you my grandfather, when he came to Taiping, settled in Ai Kuning, he was then one of the pioneers of the Methodist mission. Now, during that period, the Methodist mission had connections with Singapore, And at that period too, people got married through matchmaking by the elder people or elder members of the community. In Singapore, there was a family called the Sungs. An old lady, an unmarried lady, Madam Sung, who was a very staunch Methodist, heard through the mission that my grandfather was an eligible bachelor who was settled, a pioneer, a good Christian, and had his own bit of land in Tai Kuning, Taiping. In Singapore at that period, this old lady had a nephew who ultimately became Sir Song Ong Siang, one of the Queen's scholars in Singapore, and who became a leading lawyer and member of the Singapore Legislative Council, and who wrote the book 100 Years of the Chinese in Singapore and Malaya. Sir Song Ong Siang's brother died leaving a widow and two children, a boy and a girl. Song Ong Siang's widowed sister-in-law, Ui Chiam Nio, became matched to my grandfather Lim Kui Sin, and when they were married, she brought her two children by the Sung husband to live with my grandfather in Tai Kuning. On the 23rd of February 1887, my father Lim Ti Hui was born, and in his family he had two other brothers, Lim Ti E, born the 3rd of June 1889, and Lim Ti Sek, born on the 9th of May 1892.
Now can you tell me about your father?
Well, my father Lim Ti Hui was born in Tai Kuning, Taiping. Now in his early days, he first joined an English school called the Central School in Taiping. Now the Central School was a mission school, the first school in first English school in Taiping. It was situated in the present site of the General Hospital, Taiping. He had to walk all the way from Tai Kuning to the school every morning.
Wow.
And after a few years of schooling in Taiping, his grand aunt, indirectly the Madam Song of Singapore, who arranged the marriage of my grandfather and my grandmother, took him to Singapore to continue his education in Raffles Institution, or then called Raffles School. So my father spent several years in Raffles Institution in Singapore before he graduated at Standard 7. And that was the highest class that he could go at that time. He remembers in his boyhood days in Taiping, he had a very good friend and that was Tan Che Ah, who ultimately became his brother-in-law, who married his stepsister Song. These two used to go fishing, and there were many pools in and around Taiping, between Ai Kuning and Taiping, so that after school he used to go fishing with a net, a cast net, and these nets they made themselves, which was quite an achievement in those days. After catching the fish, he tells us that he used to sell the fish, so as to get some money for his pocket expenses and also help in the family budget. After leaving school at standard 7, he joined the Perak Medical Services and became what was then known as a dresser, or what we call today a hospital assistant. His first posting was in Kuala Kangsar, where he worked in the hospital, and with his earnings of $12 a month, the money was so big in those days, not only could he keep himself with that money, he could even send money home to help in education of his two younger brothers, T.E. and T.Seng. My father, being the eldest son, took on the responsibility to see that his two younger brothers were properly educated and properly married before he himself decided to get married, because his parents died around 1904. Both my grandfather and my grandmother are now buried in a small little cemetery on the top of a hill, not very far from the original settlement in Ai Kuning, which was a special reserve cemetery for the pioneer Methodists who settled in that area. My father used to tell me that when he was a dresser or hospital assistant in Kuala Kangsar, he had many Malay friends, and as a result of his friendship with the Malays, he delved in Malay spiritualism. And every night after work with his bomos, he learned the art of Malay spiritualism and used to conduct seances, or what it is, or what you might call menurun in the Malay term, that is to get a medium going into a trance. And the mediums used to be young Malays who body or spirit or soul or whatever you call them was taken over by the spirits of the jinn. And he tells me too that there are different types of spirits. The ones that are well known are the jinn, which is supposed to be a giant with red long hair, and then there is the tiger spirit who, when the spirit of the tiger enters the body of the medium, nobody should go under the house, because as you know, in those days everybody lives in Malay houses or bungalows where the floor is raised above the ground, and under the house immediately below where the seance or the menurun is taking place, the tiger is supposed to roam and would attack anybody who came round in that area. And of course, there is the other third famous or well-known spirit, the spirit of Pontiana, which is supposed to be the spirit of the woman who died in childbirth. Now, my father tells me that in those days he was so deeply involved in Malay spiritualism that he was one of the masters in the art, and that he used to rear one of the jinns himself. Now, it was common practice in those days for these experts or masters in spiritualism to rear certain spirits. That means to say, you have to observe certain customs, certain etiquettes. You have to feed the spirits, and you have to offer regular prayers and sacrifices. Now, what is the purpose of rearing a jinn? To him, it meant that it was power. You could use these spirits for purposes of good, to heal people who are sick. And very often, he used to help in the cure of the sick, despite his professional services as a Western educated medical assistant. Now, during that period in Kuala Kangsar, he did not marry, but ensured that his two other brothers, T.E. and T.Sek, were married, and at that time a Malay woman lived with him. And after working in Kuala Kangsar for several years, he was transferred to Kampar. And at Kampar, whilst working in the eye clinic, he treated a lady who had both her eyes badly diseased. And this lady, after much medical treatment, regained her sight, and she, who was who had both her feet bound, ultimately married my father, and her name was Fong Chiong Mui, or what we used to call as Haku. Now, Fong Chiong Mui, because of the fact that she had her feet both bound, tiny little feet walking on small little heels, indicated that she came from a very well-to-do family in China. And her history is not very much known, why she came to China, why she came from China to Malaya. But what we do know is that her father, Fong, was a public vaccinator in China, who was the son of a mandarin. That means to say, she is the granddaughter of a mandarin in a village in Canton, China. Now, after my father married Fong Chiong Mui, they had no issue. And at that time too, a little boy, a little Indian boy, was born in the hospital. And as the mother died, and as there were no, as this boy became an orphan, my father adopted him and gave him the name of Lim Sui Bin. And as you all know, he is called Kichiko. And he was looked after, brought up by Fong Chiong Mui, or Aku, as we call her, as her son. Now, after several years, Fong Chong Mi decided that my father should have a family. So she decided to take my father with her to China, and that was before the First World War. They went by boat to Canton, went to pay their respects to the her family in Canton, and she introduced my father to her other sisters. Now that family had several sisters and only one son or one brother, and the second daughter, Fong Ngan, was formally married to my father, and she became my mother, and I was born on the 1st of September in 1915 in Malaya, after my father brought my mother Fong Ngan back from Canton to Taiping, where he was then posted. At Taiping, my father was then working as the hospital assistant in charge of the hospital in the Taiping prisons.
Gonggong, how could it be that he could have two wives at the same time and both of them being sisters?
During that period, the Chinese culture was such that not was only polygamy permissible, it was also fashionable, in that besides being fashionable, it meant status. The more wives a man had, the greater the respect he received from his community. Also during that period, the main purpose of a Chinese when he gets married is to have children. Not any children, but children who are boys to carry on his surname. Therefore, when my mother was married, being the second daughter in the family, she was introduced and arranged to be married by her elder sister, who was then the first wife of my father. The first wife, being sterile herself and unable to have any children of her own, it was also customary during that period to offer any of her sisters to be the secondary wives of the husband, so that a son can be born. That was how my mother, Chong Fong Ngan, married my father. My mother was very thrifty, very industrious, and very business-minded. She used to grow flowers, collect flowers. She used to rear chickens to collect the eggs. There used to be a big fruit tree. The rose apple in the house at 96 jail quarters where I was born, and the produce of the garden was sold daily in the market, and with this money she invested in tontines. In those days, instead of putting the money in the bank or doing other business, small investors put their money in tontines, which was a form of loans at very good interest. The unfortunate part of this system was that the treasurer could go bankrupt, and the premium of capital invested by the members of the Tonkin would be lost. In the case of my mother, her investments in Tonkin was quite high, and as a result of the bankruptcy of the treasurer, Wong Hee, the adopted daughter of the treasurer, was given to my mother as a maid. She grew up with us and later became the third wife of my father. Round about that period, my mother's younger sister, Fong Yong, came from China since her parents had recently passed away. She too became a wife of my father, being the fourth in number, and we called our mothers differently, in that the first mother, Fong Chong Mui, was called Aku, as she wanted to be treated as a sister rather than as a wife, hence the name Aku. And my mother was called Ama, Mong Hee was called Asam, and Fong Nan was called Ai, sister of the mother. In all, we are 15 children in the family. My mother has 7 children, 4 boys and 3 girls. Asam has 5 children, 4 boys and 1 girl. Ai has 2 boys and 1 girl.
The recording stops abruptly at that point. I guess it was pretty late in the evening that night, and we all went off to bed. I was going to record more interviews with my grandfather, but somehow that Christmas holiday went by. There were the Christmas celebrations and the family get-togethers and having fun playing with my cousins. I came back to school in England and we all got on with our lives. My grandparents, in the next year, went on a round-the-world trip to see all their friends and family. At the end of that long holiday, my uncle in London dropped them off at Heathrow Airport. As they made their way through to the checkout counters, my grandfather had a heart attack. He died there on the floor of the Heathrow departure hall. It's funny listening to his voice now 30 years later. He sounds exactly like my uncle who lives in Australia, Uncle Meng Un, grandfather's eldest son, who is now around 60, just a few years older than my grandfather was when we made that recording. And so, in many ways, we all live on. Thank you for listening, and I hope to see you next time.